Good evening. It's raining. Maybe not at the exact moment, but off and on, this has been so there's been a discussion on the listserv of the Soto teachers about prayer. It started out when somebody mentioned that maybe we should pray for rain out here on the West Coast. And then somebody wrote and said, well, but that's superstitious and we don't pray, we're Buddhists. And then somebody wrote, well, but Dogen talks about prayer sometimes, and the discussion just went on and on in such a wonderful way. Not everybody agrees with everybody. Some people think it works, but that it's a placebo and works as a placebo, but that's okay too. And some people think it's superstitious, but some people need a superstition to be able to get through their life, and so that's okay. It was a very mellow kind of conversation. Some talked about ancient belief systems in Buddhism and how far back it goes, and all the different gods and protectors that people used to call on and still do in many of the Far Eastern religious practices, calling on protectors. I remember my friend Tinley said when she was 16 years old, she rushed into her teacher's little room, and he was sitting there, and she had something fabulous to tell him, and she slammed the door, and she said, oh, teacher, teacher, and he said, shh, there are many beings around here you can't see. Don't disturb them. You frighten them. Oh. When it started to rain, I thought, well, an awful lot of energy went toward requesting it, so who knows how it came. But I think the greatest prayer is gratitude. We have so much to be thankful for. We don't have to be grateful to somebody. We don't have to make up some kind of projected figure, but in our own heart we can feel tremendous gratitude just for things as they are, just as it is. So we're finished with Bendoa, just about. I mean, we're really finished. Though you never finish it, I must say I've done Bendoa maybe 3 or 4 times, and it's new every time. It's always good to go back and never think in this kind of material that we've finished. There isn't any kind of finishing. There's always a truth that shines back to us from these pages that stays true, and our life keeps changing, so it helps to go back and be surprised by it. So it stops in Kaz's way. To say only don't think that today is the beginning of our spreading the Dharma. Our work does not depend upon place or circumstance. Just consider that today is the beginning. Every day is the beginning. So I brought the book back because I wanted to hear from you all what it meant to you, what you learned from this study. What are you taking home that was of help to you? We slowly go through this material and we talk about it a bit every week. Does it make a difference? And what might that difference or those differences be?
For me, I was going to say that reading Dogen is sometimes a challenge. This wasn't quite as bad as the mountains and rivers and other things. And it was mildly amusing some of his pointed, sort of terse replies to the sort of blundering questions, I think, that he saw. But I really have a wonderful insight to some of it with your help in sort of translating and bringing it back another way outside of just the written words that I look at, because they're sort of my own interpretation, and sometimes that's quite limited. So, but it was very helpful to hear your insight, and it really, I think that for me, the thing that keeps returning is his references to there is nothing but this practice. This is the nirvana or the enlightenment. And so the battling of wanting the good zazen, the peaceful, and all of those other things, it's kind of wonderful to come back to that main point and just sit and remember that that is his main point, and all of the questions seem to just get thrown back to the same core. So that was my quick thing.
Oh, thank you. Allie?
I actually told you this a little bit already, but what I was, I think it was earlier on when we were studying Vendola, and I was sick again, and I had gone back to bed, and I just was feeling awful, and I picked up the Vendola, and I just started reading that little bit where he says that he wanted to write this down so that practitioners of the way could find, even if they couldn't find it physically, he didn't know what mountain or river he would be at, so that he wanted to leave this for them, for all of us who are, sincere. And I somehow was just so struck and so touched by that in a way. It just, I've had a hard time. I mean, he's not easy. He's not easy for any of us, really. But I think it kind of allowed me to have a little bit of an emotional connection with him. And that made me appreciate him more. Just the simplicity, really, of his message, of it's meditation. And I don't think anybody could ever say that to me too many times. But just it just sort of gave me a little keyhole, I think, to kind of want to go along there to the mountain, the river, wherever you happen to be.
Yes. Just really right here.
And right here, but just how sincere he must have been, and how hard he must have worked.
Yeah.
And you said he had TB.
Yes.
And how much he must have suffered too.
Yeah.
In my life.
Yes. Yes, he did. And usually with TB, it's very intense too. It's a lot of fever, so that affects the mind and just keeps it up so much, and you can hear it in his teaching. Yes, the mountains and rivers are right there in bed with you. It's wonderful.
But hearing you talk about it too was a further way in, and I've missed quite a bit here. I do think it's something that I want to keep coming back to.
Oh, thank you. Well, we'll put it aside for now. Maybe in 15 years we'll come back to it and take it all over again. You can bring Josephine with you. And teach her how to sit. She'll probably fall asleep the way Sophie did. Well, thinking about what to do next, and I went through all my books, which are not very contemporary anymore. And we've done a lot of things. I'm just amazed at how many things we've done. So there are two that I came up with that we haven't done, and one is this. This is the Vimalakirti, the holy teaching of Vimalakirti. Translation by Robert Thurman, which is called The Jewel of the Mahayana Sutras. And it's a jewel not just because it's important Mahayana Buddhism, but as it says here, a precise, dramatic, and even humorous form. And it is. It's very personable and personal. You get to know these guys really well. And I always enjoy it very much. So this is one possibility. And then the other one is not Zen, though it might as well be. And this is Chogyam Trungpa's commentaries on the training the mind. I've forgotten what it's called in Sanskrit.
Lojong
training. And what it is just very short little pointers. And Donna Lynn has used this somewhat, I think, when she has done some teaching.
Fisher's new book on the Lojong.
Aha.
I forget what it's called. Something about
training and compassion.
Training and compassion. Yeah, this is cultivating loving kindness. So that's Chogyam's version of it. So I thought that might be useful because they're so short that they can be taken home and cultivated for a whole week. Week to week, without having to read an extensive essay or anything in particular, but just to really take it in. Chogyam gives a couple of paragraphs, maybe three or four usually, as a kind of commentary on each one, and they are very to the point. He had a remarkable mind and a remarkable way of seeing how we are in the West, even though he grew up in Tibet. He picked up English just like that, and picked up English that sounds like everybody talks, not like a teacher would talk, but in ordinary, everyday English. And very very clever and very funny often. And very giving no slack. Very direct, very straightforward. So I don't know whether you want to go into something like this, but this is a possibility. And of course there's Norman's version of it too, which will be more Zen, I suppose. And you might know other things that you would like to study too, that might also be interesting. We can go back to the Dogen's work about cooking. That's always a very helpful and very sensible and practical one. It seems like maybe after studying Dogen, it would be well to find some sort of homely thing to talk about, something simpler and maybe with some lightness to go with it. And these will do that. So I think I'll just leave it up to you all, because I mean, so when I come back, I won't be here next week, so when I come back we can talk about it some more. And maybe I'll bring something, well, I don't know. We could decide tonight. That might make more sense. Otherwise, it'll get strung out again. So if there are things that you've been reading and want to go into more, there's always Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. I always go right back to the beginning.
I'd be interested in Chogyam Trungpa. But I'd like something core of his. I'm wondering. I've read some of spiritual materialism.
That's a good one.
I'm just wondering if the Lojongs are just going to be his slant on some paramita type. Or if they really get to the core of his belief.
I see what you mean. Yeah, it is a lot of his talk. So here's number 11. When the world is filled with evil, transform all mishaps into the path of Bodhi. So then he says, continuing with the idea of carrying everything to the path, The basic slogan of this section is, when the world is filled with evil, transform all mishaps into the path of Bodhi. So we could take that home and apply it to every stumble that goes along for a whole however, or go on to his discussion, which is to say, whatever occurs in your life, environmental problems, political problems, or psychological problems, should be transformed into a part of your wakefulness, or bodhi. Such wakefulness is a result of the practice of shamatha, discipline, vipassana, discipline, meaning zazen, as well as your basic understanding of soft spot, or bodhicitta. That's a very interesting way of talking about bodhicitta, the soft spot. In other words, you do not blame the environment or the world political situation. Certain people are inspired to write poetry and act in such a way that they sacrifice their lives for a social cause. We could quite safely say that the Vietnam War produced a lot of poets and philosophers, but their work is not in keeping with this Mahayana principle. They were purely reacting against the world being filled with evil. They were not able to transform mishaps into the path of Bodhi. Such poets may even regard evil as material for their writing. If the Vietnam War had never happened, we would have fewer of such poets and philosophers. According to this slogan, when the world is filled with evil, or even when the world is not filled with evil, any mishaps that might occur should all be transformed into the path of Bodhi, or wakefulness. This understanding comes from your sitting practice and your general awareness. This slogan says practically everything about how we can practice generosity as well. In our ordinary life, our immediate surroundings or our once removed surroundings are not necessarily hospitable. There are always problems and difficulties. There are difficulties even though for those who proclaim that their lives are very successful. Those who have become the president of their country or the richest millionaires or the most famous poets or movie stars or surfers or bullfighters. Even if our lives go right, according to our expectations, there are still difficulties. Obstacles always arise. That is something everybody experiences. And when obstacles happen, any mishaps connected with those obstacles, poverty, mentality, fixating on loss and gain, or any kind of competitiveness, should be transformed into the path of Bodhi. That is a very powerful and direct message. It is connected with not feeling poverty-stricken all the time. You might feel inadequate because you have a sick father and a crazy mother, and you have to take care of them, or because you have a distorted life and money problems. For that matter, even if you have a successful life and everything is going all right, you might feel inadequate because you have to work constantly to maintain your business. A lot of those situations could be regarded as expressions of your own timidity and cowardice. They should all be regarded as expressions of your poverty mentality. And he goes on. So it's that kind of language, that kind of mind. Very straightforward. And very present. I like the bullfighters and the surfers and those things. It's our world, our life that he's talking about, not some other place and other time. So what do you think? Shall I read you some Vimalakirti? Want to have a taste of this? So this is very kind of fairy tale like. Thus have I heard, at one time the Lord Buddha was in residence in the garden of Amrapali, in the city of Vaisali, attended by a great gathering of bhikshus. There were 8,000. They were free from they were all perfect. Their minds were liberated. They were calm and dignified like royal elephants. Of bodhisattvas, there were 32,000 great spiritual heroes who were universally acclaimed. Their mindfulness, intelligence, realization, etc., all eloquence were perfected. Free from obscurations and emotional involvements. They knew everything. Their voices were perfect. They were expert in the way of Dharma. They had crossed the terrifying abyss of the bad migrations, and yet they assumed reincarnation voluntarily in all migrations for the sake of disciplining living beings. That's the bodhisattva vow, to come back. And then this gives them their names, this whole long list of names. Samadarsana, Asamadarsana, Samadivikrtavichata. I won't try to do that. And they're also gathered, as well as all of these, there were 10,000 Brahmas. And they had come from the Ashoka universe, from a whole other universe, with its four sections, in order to see and venerate the Buddha. So this is a big gathering. There were 12,000 chakras from various four-sector universes. And there were other powerful gods, devas, nagas, yaksas, gandharvas, asuras, garudas, kimnaras, and maharagas. Finally, there was the fourfold community consisting of bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, laymen, and laywomen. So everybody came. The Buddha was thus surrounded and venerated by these multitudes of many hundreds of thousands of living beings, sat upon a majestic lion throne, and began to teach the Dharma. Thereupon, the Lichavi Bodhisattva Ratnakara, with 500 Lichavi youths, each holding a precious parasol made of 7 different kinds of jewels, came forth from the city of Vaisali and presented himself at the grove of Amrapali. Each approached the Buddha, bowed at his feet, circumambulated him clockwise 7 times, laid down his precious parasol in offering, and withdrew to one side. As soon as all these precious parasols had been laid down, suddenly, by the miraculous power of the Lord, they were transformed into a single precious canopy, so great that it formed a covering for this entire billion-world galaxy. The surface was reflected on the interior of the canopy, where the total content of the galaxy could be seen. Suns and moons and stellar bodies and realms of devas and nagas and yakshas and etc. And this vision of the magnificent miracle affected by supernatural power, the entire host was ecstatic, enraptured, astonished, delighted, satisfied, and filled with awe and pleasure. They all bowed down to the Tathagata, withdrew to one side, and gazed upon him with fixed attention. And then the young Lichavi knelt with his right knee on the ground and praised the Buddha with a hymn, saying how great Buddha is, on and on. He says, you associate with living beings by frequenting their migrations, yet your mind is liberated from migrations, just as the lotus born of mud is not tainted thereby. So the lotus of the Buddha preserves the realization of voidness. You are not subject to any wish for anything at all. So then he starts a conversation with the Buddha and a discussion of what the bodhisattva life is about. And the Lichavi Vimalakirti, it was his room where they gathered with the question of what the real actual practice of the Dharma was. And so all the bodhisattvas began a discussion between themselves and kind of jibed each other and teased each other, and finally the layman, beside all these magnificent bodhisattvas, the layman, Vimalakirti, was the one who bested them all in the end. So that is a story to presumably to encourage people like us. Vimalakirti didn't even get out of bed, actually. So in that story, he just is lounging in bed and all these people are gathering around him, these millions and jillions and of every kind of being in the whole, really the whole universe, or the many universes. So that's that one. We can always go back to Bendoa. So what do you think, Jeffrey?
It's about to do a boat.
Yes.
Okay. So who's for Chogyam Trungpas and Vimalakirti? Well, we'll finish this, you know, one of these days, and then we can go on to Vimalakirti.
Yes.
Good. Excellent. And it's just 8 o'clock. That's perfect.